If you've struggled with stress, balance, or burnout, and simply feel discouraged or even defeated, and if you're ready to move from force to flow and enjoy ultimate Zen success in your career, health, or relationships, then the Zen Success Show is for you. Your host, Carissa Sims, is an entrepreneur, corporate consultant, best-selling author, meditation teacher, and healer who has found her own Zen success. Here's your host, Carissa Sims.
Welcome to this week's episode of Zen Success. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Angela Laria. Hi,
hello. Dr. Angela. Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Yes, and we've already been talking. I feel like I'm talking to my sister. Like I've already known you.
That must mean your sister, like me, appreciates Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, yes, yes. Girl Scout cookies. I know. I love that. I love that story of you buying the cookies.
But horrifying my husband by how many Girl Scout cookies I can consume.
Yeah, because your husband's from the UK, right? And he didn't.
Yeah. Did not understand the magic. I also quizzed the Girl Scouts and to see if they knew. On my honor, I will try. I asked them, who is the leader of the Girl Scouts? I'm like, they didn't know. I'm like, Juliet Gordon-Lowe, let's get on this, girls. We have work to do.
Oh my gosh. Maybe they need your mentorship.
Clearly, this is my calling.
I'm sure they didn't expect that. They're hoping to harass you and get you to buy cookies. And then they're like, oh my God, we're getting
quit. And to be fair, they were daisies. So it is a lot to expect from four.
Yeah, fair. Okay. Well, wonderful. And you have your own podcast too, Dr. Angela.
Yeah.
Let me share about you. And then you can talk about it. Cool. She's host of the Autistic Culture podcast and is a late diagnosed autistic who has drawn on her lifelong special interest in nonfiction to help almost 2,000 entrepreneurs write, publish, and promote their books through her company, Difference Press. Angela is also an author herself with 8 books, including a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. She has a BA and an MA in journalism and media affairs. Well, that's perfect. Your career, that's amazing. From George Washington University and a PhD in communications from European Graduate School. And she lives in Washington, D.C. Yay. Thank you for being here.
I am very happy to be here. I am one of the rare people who actually has a job in my major in college. It does happen. I am that unicorn.
You know, what's interesting is I'm a little bit of that unicorn too. I mean, my career path went a little bit like this because I was interested in health. So I'm an OT and I got into personal training, but my degree is in communications.
Ah, and here you are communicating. That's what we're going to do today.
So yeah, that's it. And I want to like dive into you and your journey and your path. Do you feel that there are many undiagnosed adults that are neurodivergent?
Ooh, what a great question. I don't even know if I gave you that one, but man,
you did.
I'm like, I don't think I did. That's such a great question. Okay, let's talk about math. I know this is not what everyone likes to talk about, but in math, there were those, the curves, like when they would score you, and in the middle was like 80%, and then it got skinny at the ends and big and fat in the middle, right? So neurodiversity just means the world is diverse. Like we have a diversity of flora and fauna, and there's lots of different kinds of flowers. Like there's a diversity in nature. And so neurodiversity,
oh, beautiful.
Brain diversity. And every single brain is different. No two brains are alike. Even if you were twins, identical twins, because your brain is shaped, you probably know a little bit about neuroplasticity. So your brain is shaped by both your biology and experience. No two people have the same experiences. Therefore, no two brains are the same. So I don't just believe this. This is just true. But I celebrate the diversity of our brains.
Oh, neurodivergent cool.
people. So autistic people are among the outliers. We're just at the skinny ends of that parabola or whatever it is, like that bell curve. Mm-hmm. We're at the skinny ends. And with us are people with Tourette's, with ADHD, with bipolar. They're all different neurodivergences that end up putting you in those skinny ends. So what happened with autism is they didn't know what that was. And so the diagnosis first started off as they actually called it childhood schizophrenia at the beginning.
Really? And then what was the beginning? When did they first start diagnosing? So
when they came up with the name autism and they started, which aut, A-U-T means self. So when they started diagnosing autism was in 1943.
Wow. So interesting. Okay.
The very first person diagnosed, like just died recently. I think he was like 86 or 87 when he died.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you might know Temple Grandin. She was one of the first people diagnosed. She was diagnosed in 1953. So at the beginning, there were just like a few, what do they call those, like orphan diseases? There were like a few edge cases. And then they started catching more and more people. But it just so happened the people who had the time, money, position, ability to get their kid diagnosed, because everyone else just had a messed up kid. They didn't know what it was, right? Like they didn't know how to explain it. But
right.
The people who happened to have the money happened to be mostly white people.
Okay.
And the people that were mostly diagnosed happened to be little boys.
Okay.
So we now know the reason for this is little girls were also being conditioned by their femaleness to be quiet, to be behaved.
Yeah, they were rewarded for that.
Right. Whereas the boys were like, there are certain expectations we had of men, and we're talking about boys in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Mostly in America. There was diagnosis happening in Germany, but that's another story. So it was a very particular type of people. And then they wrote up all the coding for how will we diagnose it. And it matched rich white boys.
Mm.
So we missed people of color, queer uh-huh. people, adults, which obviously there had to be adults that were autistic if there were kids that were autistic, because we don't just all magically die on our 18th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they weren't looking for adults. They weren't looking for women. They weren't looking for Black people. They weren't looking for, you know, what Native Americans, like uh-huh. they weren't in those doctor's offices. So, so there is a massive underdiagnosis. And through the years, we've gotten better and better. So in schools, we were good at identifying boys. Then we got better at, you know, identifying people from different backgrounds. And really, it wasn't until about 2015, 2016, that adults started getting diagnosed. And the way that happened is really fun. About half of late diagnosis, and this is not my story, but about half of late diagnosis comes when your kid gets diagnosed.
Oh, it brings awareness to the parent. Okay.
Yeah, they're like, oh my God, that would have helped me in school. Wait, he gets to wear a headphone. Oh my God, what if I should have gotten good grades? Or like he gets to take a test in a separate room. I bet I could have gone to college.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And so there's all this like grief and like a need to identify. And then just because of the timing of life of generations, like people have to have kids, we have to get better at diagnosing. But autism, like all neurodivergence, is inherited. It is largely inherited. There are environmental effectors that can have an effect, but it either is your neurotype or it isn't your neurotype, like your eye color. Your eyes could look brighter blue or duller blue, depending on what you eat, but you still got blue eyes. So of course their parents are neurodivergent because that's how it works. Recessive dominant genes. You either got a whole bunch of grandparents or one of your parents is autistic. So by the way, if you have an autistic kid and you didn't know it, you or their other parent is almost certainly autistic. So go get a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So everyone starts getting these late diagnoses and people are like, oh my God, there's an epidemic. People think they're neurodivergent and they aren't. Right now, about 3% of people are diagnosed as autistic. I think that number is closer to 20%. And that is based on my vast knowledge of bell curves, right? So it's just like 80% of the people are going to be in the norm. And then 20% are going to diverge from the norm and be in that skinny part, because that's how bell curves work.
Right.
So I think we have a chronic underdiagnosis. I think it's getting corrected, but a lot of people are alarmed and there's nothing to be alarmed about. It's just like the normal process of science evolving and us understanding it better.
Yeah.
A very long answer. I'm sorry.
You don't have to apologize. We're just talking. We're chatting. It's wonderful. And I sometimes think about different diagnoses like ADD, ADHD, and, you know, kids getting medicated for that. But then obviously, I mean, I'm not a medical doctor, but there's a difference when someone is autistic and there's certain levels or certain types, right?
Yeah. So that's actually an area of great dispute. You pressed a hot button.
I did. Okay. Well, that's so interesting. Okay.
I'm going to give you this from both sides.
Okay.
And I will tell you
a neutral opinion here.
I'm going to give you both sides. And then actually my opinion is just completely out of left field. So then I'll give you my opinion.
Thank you.
One side of this argument is that autism is the type, and this is from the DSM-5. It was updated a few years back now, 2018, I think.
It's a mental health diagnosis booklet for practitioners, right? DSM.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the how you code it to get the insurance company to pay you in America. Okay. So they say there is a thing called autism. It is one thing. And there are three levels. And in level one, it used to be called Asperger's, which is what I was diagnosed with. Yep.
Yeah. So My brother was diagnosed with Asperger's. Yeah.
So they sometimes call that high functioning. By the way, we hate this. Autism advocates hate this. Okay. So they call it high functioning. They say you're level one. They used to say Asperger's. And what it means is you can sometimes hold down a job. You don't have high support needs. So you are high functioning. But the truth is we are not the same thing as any people. Like, are you high functioning? Let me ask you that after a breakup and, you know, when you fell down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, we're human. And sometimes
we're human functioning.
Yeah, right. Human. And sometimes so
when we, right. So when we call level one, when we use these levels, it doesn't really give space for level one people to have burnouts and meltdown and have their need met. They're supposed to be just like mass, just like figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. And then level three is what you often picture when you think of autism. So people meet me and say, you don't look autistic. I look very autistic. This is what autistic people look like. But they are picturing someone who can't speak, who might be using a spell device.
Uh-huh.
They're often picturing someone with it also a co-occurring intellectual disability.
Right?
27% of autistic people have intellectual disabilities. It's a separate disability though. And they kind of merge that.
That's very low. People's
low functioning.
Yeah.
And then moms of these kids, who, by the way, are often autistic too. Surprise. But the moms of these kids are like, people with Asperger's, people with level one should shut up because my kids' needs aren't being met.
Oh, they need more of the resources. They're asking for
stealing our resources, right? So there's this fight between what are called autism moms that autistic advocates are like, you guys are missing the point, right? So on the other side, there's autism advocates and they say there shouldn't be levels.
Okay.
The DSM is wrong. We've changed the DSM before. We should change it again.
Okay.
we're all one thing. The way the spectrum works is we all have different support needs, and we all have different support needs on different days. So you might have different support needs when you have your period. You might have different support needs when you're going through menopause. Like, we all have different support needs, and we should identify those support needs and get autistic people the help they need.
And we shouldn't be divided. That's okay. Wonderful.
I'm going to blow your mind, and I'm going to give you a third way.
Okay. Number one
is this is medical, and we need separate diagnosis so our kids can get the attention.
Categories.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Lesson two, or category two, is this is medical, and we should all be grouped together, treated the same way, but with respect and with our needs being met.
Mm-hmm.
My way is, this is not a medical condition any more than being Italian is a medical condition or having blue eyes is a medical condition.
Oh, you want to reframe it.
I believe that it is a unique and distinct culture that is part of our neurodiversity, just like the culture of deaf people and the culture of Italian Americans.
Yeah.
And our culture is autistic culture.
Okay.
But then within that, just because we're human, we're going to have medical needs. So I might happen to be Italian American and have liver problems.
Okay.
Or I might be autistic and have liver problems. And it's possible that autistic people have more liver problems or Italian people have more liver problems. So it is true. Autistic people are more likely, for instance, to get lupus and autoimmune conditions.
I didn't know that.
So are Filipinos, maybe. I don't know. Like,
yes, there just are hypothetically.
Many, yeah. Like,
different cultures are susceptible. Right.
Short people might be more likely to get a certain disease or chronic illness. Tall people might, like, athletes are more likely to get shin splints. So there are a bunch of things that autistic people are more likely to have to deal with. For instance, intellectual disabilities. We have 27%. Neurotypical people don't have anywhere near that number. So, and I believe intellectual disabilities should be fully supported, whatever therapies, like anything, like, let's give all the support. I just don't think autism is a diagnosis at all. I think it's an identity that happens to have a bunch of medical issues related to it, just like any other identity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting, because my younger brother was diagnosed, like I said before, with Asperger's. Is that how you say it?
Asperger's.
Asperger's. Although, yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Not commonly used as much anymore, but. Yeah.
Oh, it's not as used as much, or high functioning autism.
Right.
So, I mean, I could see that he had some symptoms when he was younger, but he kind of like grew out of it a little bit. He had like a little bit of the shaking and.
Okay. So let me tell you what that is. He didn't grow out of it.
Tell me.
So what happened is he learned how to manage the trauma. So.
Got it. This is so amazing. Stimming.
So
what do you call it?
We call it stimming.
Stimming.
And it's because we have, so medically what's happening is, we have less synaptical pruning that leads to us getting a lot more input, about 42% more input. So if you ever walked into a movie theater and it was super loud and you're like, ooh, this is loud, we're getting that all the time. Smells, sights, everything you can imagine in the world, we get 42% more. So walk into that movie theater and raise the volume 42%. That's what we're dealing with. Okay.
Wow.
So what we need to do to regulate is something called stimming, because we like feel freaked out. Think of that feeling when you hear like a really loud noise.
Yeah.
You're like freaked out for a second and then you're fine. You recover like really quickly. We don't recover as quickly. And so when we're stimming, I've got a stim toy right here. It's I can feel myself and it doesn't feel good. And I want this to go away. And so I need to distract myself, comfort myself. The word we use is soothe, right? Soothe.
Yes.
Now, I am 8 and my mom has taken me somewhere very loud. I can't choose not to be there. My mom's taking me to the doctors and it smells and I'm freaked out, right? I can't choose not to be there. But as we get older, we start to learn what works for us. So for some autistic people, that's being outside more. For some autistic people, that's being inside more. Some autistic people are sensory seeking. So they want to be where it's really bright and loud. So if you know, like daredevils, they are often autistic.
I believe that. Or I've also heard like football players because they like the pressure.
Yeah, football players. Most of the circus.
Oh. And
one of our co-occurrences is hypermobility.
Oh, interesting.
So Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So any of the contortionists you've ever seen at a Cirque du Soleil, 99.9% of them are autistic.
Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Fascinating,
I've been to a lot of Cirque du Soleil shows.
It's almost all, like, so many of those people. We've done an episode of the podcast on that.
Oh, that's so cool.
So what happens is you figure out, just by humaning, you figure out what you need. And so the symptoms that you saw, like the self-soothing, he's learned one of two things. He's either learned to mask because he was getting in trouble. His teacher tied his hands behind his back.
Or
which can lead to burnout and illness. Or he's learned, I shouldn't go to loud places. It freaks me out and I need to rock. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And as an autistic person, once you're diagnosed, it becomes easier to see where am I masking and it's unhealthy and destructive? And where have I found coping methods that really work for me? So we don't like grow out of being autistic. It's just we either learn masking techniques or positive coping techniques. And my goal is for people to have more of those positive coping techniques.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, and another thing, what you were saying is that 27% have intellectual disabilities. And with my brother, he is really smart and knew how to do well in school. Like it just came easy to him, and he does computer programming now. And
this is the way.
This is the way.
Many of our people do,
but very introverted. You know, wanting to just play video games and be left alone is
really... So let's talk about a couple of those things,
okay?
Because it's not introverted. It's not what you think.
Oh, thank you. See, you're enlightening me.
The way that hyperconnected autistic brains work is designed, and this is the beauty of neurodiversity. This is why we wouldn't want all pine trees, but we also don't want to eliminate all pine trees, right? So I'm going to tell you how this works. Most people, that 80% in the middle, their brains are designed to be generalists. So if they're walking in the woods, they could figure out how to kill a bear. They could also figure out how to harvest berries. They're designed to survive in the wild. So having lots of different skills at a, you know, like a skin deep level is, you know, all you need. And then if you find some interest, you can go a little deeper. Autistic people, we're all dead in the woods. It's not good news for us. So we have what are called monotropic brains, which means we go very, 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 very deep, like to the bottom of the ocean, but only in one or two areas. And these areas are called our special interests. So my monotropic special interest is books, which is why I've ghostwritten hundreds of books and published thousands of books.
Wow.
Because this is my area of expertise. If you ask me to make dinner, forget it. I can't even get the mail. I have very low executive functioning skills. But if you told me I really need you to write a book for me tonight and it needs to be 50,000 words, I could probably get it done by breakfast.
Wow. So, you were like a superhero.
And then completely unfunctional. See, this is why high functioning and low functioning makes no sense. I can't feed myself. I can't drive. I am completely time blind. I could never get to an appointment on time. I need a ton of support But also, I've made $50 million helping people get their books done. So am I high functioning or low functioning?
Mic drop.
Right. So when you say my brother is high functioning, your brother's just an autistic human. There are things he's amazing at.
Yes.
And there are things he's terrible at because we have monotropic brains. So when we are in a monotropic focus, oh, you know that book Flow?
Yes.
Csikszentmihalyi's book Flow.
Yes. We had to read that in grad school. I'm an occupational therapist.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So the flow state is the normal state for autistics.
Wow. That is our
normal state. That is
normal. No wonder why so many are athletes.
Right. Exactly. So imagine, I don't know, Usain Bolt. He's in the middle of prepping to run. And you would like to chat with him. Do you think he would like to have a casual chat about the weather with you?
No.
Or cocker spaniels? So your brother is not introverted. I mean, he might be introverted, but that's not the behavior you're noting.
Your brother
is monotropically focused. So when you come in and you're like, hey, do you want to pet the cocker spaniel? He's like, dude, I'm in flow.
Yes.
And so he probably said nothing because it sounds like he's not a particularly explosive type, although some of us are.
Sometimes.
So meltdowns, when we talk about those rich little white boys in the 50s and 60s who their moms had to get a diagnosis, they were having meltdowns. But what was really happening was people were interrupting their flow state. People, and so you would have a meltdown too, and so would Usain Bolt.
Oh my God, now I want to diagnose my son.
Well, so that's what's really interesting. So the number one thing,
but it's making me have compassion for that flow. You know what I mean?
Because we're completely misinterpreted because people are thinking it's a meltdown. It's not a meltdown. You just interrupted me and I'm about to like save the world. Like,
yeah.
That's what it feels like. If you could think about when you're in a flow state, it's like rare and magical and sparkly and intense and tingly. And then somebody wants to find out what you want for dinner. It doesn't compute. Now, again, we need a diverse world, but just so you know, bridges invented by autistic people, the first tools invented by autistic people, Star Wars invented by autistic people. So you need our monotropic focus. You want our monotropic focus. And we want your ability to function in society and help us, you know, get groceries. Like, there are lots of things we need neurotypical people for, but there are also lots of things we need neurodivergent people for, and it makes a beautiful world, but we can't try and make neurotypicals autistic, and we can't try and make autistics neurotypical. So if we're trying to like diagnosis, I will leave to the medical professionals.
Yes, of course.
We're trying to identify autistic traits. And if you're listening and thinking of your kid,
or yourself.
For yourself, yeah. The number one thing I want you to look for is that deep, special interest, monotropic focus. So that is the number one thing. Now, you can have multiple. So for me, I started writing books. This is my first book. I wrote it when I was 7.
Oh.
And what's it about? I will show you the title that my 7-year-old self wrote. It is Lifelong Chances. Please explain why a 7-year-old called a book Lifelong Chances. I don't know why I was.
Past life.
Yes, exactly. But I'm also Broadway. I had a deep monotropic focus on Michael Jackson. And if I was a little kid today, it would have been Taylor Swift. Now, that didn't mean I liked Michael Jackson's music. It meant I could tell you every single fact about him. So when you think of typical autistic kids, you might think of them rattling off dinosaur facts or train facts. Doesn't have to be dinosaurs or trains, but like a neurotypical liking of Taylor Swift is like playing her album a lot. An autistic liking of Taylor Swift would be 10 to 20 hours a weekend spent listening to everything, writing down the lyrics, categorizing them, singing them, studying her history, reading all her social media. We call it rabbit holing, right? And then if your kid does that with a few things, like I walked into a restaurant in England not too long ago, and there was a mom and her kid who looked to be like 9 or 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
And in front of him was a stack of books, about 20 books, and they were all on German tanks. So I sat down right next to him and I said, if you want to know what to say to autistic people, this is what you say. So I said, are you into German tanks? And he's like, oh my God, yes. I'm like, what's your favorite tank?
Yeah.
And we made a friendship for life. This is called an autistic info dump. So whatever our special interest is, all we want to do is talk about that and nothing else. We don't want small talk. We don't want the weather. We don't want logistics. Mm-hmm. We would like to talk about our special interest.
Mm-hmm.
This is the number one identifying feature of our culture, is a deep monotropic special interest or multiple. Every single fact. Pokemon is an autistic invention.
Oh.
And the theme of Pokemon is gotta catch them all. And I think there are 1 million little Pokemons that you could catch.
Okay.
An autistic person knows every single one of them, all their facts, all their powers. Mm. Like, and they are obsessed with catching them all. All the museums were started by autistic people. All the libraries were started by autistic people. Dewey Decimal is autistic. Thomas Jefferson is autistic. One of the most famous
They're getting stuff done.
But in a small, very focused way.
Yeah, in a focused way. Wow, that's so wonderful. And so how did you meet your husband, and how do you guys work out your relationship?
Oh, well, I met my husband online, but he's also autistic. One of his special interests is submarines.
Okay.
And he was working for the British Navy as a submarine expert, which is his, and another one of his special interests, which was his major in college, was geology.
Okay.
One of my special interests is crystals, which it turns out are related to geology.
Yes.
And so we fell in love over amethyst. So we have a crystal museum. We collect crystals. We have, I think at one point we had the largest collection in North America of 6-foot geodes. So we have a giant crystal garden.
Oh my God. Amazing.
That's one of our shared special interests. And we also both had a special interest in Shakespeare, and our wedding was set in 1553 and it was fully costumed. So cosplay is a big part of autistic culture. And our vows were completely Shakespearean. They were cuttings from Shakespeare plays.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yes. I love that. And so do you guys have a chef and like have people do your shopping? Like, cause you said you do all these amazing, you know, publishing books and everything. And so I was just wondering, like, a day in the life.
We all have different support needs, right? And my husband's executive functioning is much better than mine.
Okay.
And so we both have monotropic focus, cause that's part of autism, but he does all the cooking and he knows I'm not going to be very helpful. I'm really, it's a disaster. I drop things. So I have a lot more, he's much more athletic than me. So he does all the driving and all the cooking and make sure we get to places on time. So when we talk about support needs, I'm really lucky because I don't need to hire someone.
That's what I was thinking. It's so wonderful that you married someone that was a complementary. I mean, not only similar interests, but to help, in your life.
Yep. Now, on the flip side, his anxiety is much worse than mine.
Okay.
And so I think one of the things I do is sort of create safe spaces for him to have new experiences and meet people. So that's why, like, the high support needs, low support needs doesn't totally make sense, because we're all just different humans. And there are areas where he needs a lot of support, and there are areas where I need a lot of support. And in the places where both of us need support, we would hire someone. We have hired people for things where it's just not a good fit for either of us.
Oh, okay. That's amazing.
He probably wouldn't be able to travel. I mean, he might be, but it might be like medicated or something. It would be really hard.
You're like, okay, we're going to knock you out and we're going to have some fun. No, just kidding.
So yeah, there are different things, but we share, and that is a thing to look for with your kids. So what a lot of people do, and a lot of adult autistics do this themselves, is they're like, why don't people like me? We struggle with communication.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons is we have a hyper-connected brain. And so we want to talk about our special interest. And like, that doesn't look fun to other 6-year-olds to talk about dinosaurs all day, every day. So the key is to find friends of any age who share your special interest.
Yeah.
So if you are struggling or your kid's struggling with friends and you're like, why don't you hang out with Jenny? She's right across the street. Well, if she's right across the street, but she doesn't share a special interest, it's not going to work. I get that it's logical to you, mm-hmm. but it's much better to like take a weekend and drive 6 hours to the skate park or the Yu-Gi-Oh tournament rather than try and play with someone across the street who is not also autistic.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's so enlightening and helpful for parents. You know, to not push their kids to be friends with everyone, you know? Yeah. So how did you discover your gifts in your diagnosis?
Oh God. So I think for late diagnosed people, there is a lot of grief of what could have been. Mm. You know, I did extremely well in school in terms of my grades, and I did horribly in terms of relationships.
Yes.
And so I used to describe myself until I was diagnosed as like having a bad personality. Like some people get bad hair. Some people get like, I don't know, short arms. And I just got a bad personality. When they were handing out personalities, I just got a bad personality.
And so you thought that about yourself. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that's very, you know, that's very crippling and leads to a lot of missed years, missed opportunities.
Yes.
But in those missed opportunities, the things that were consistent for me were things like theater and books, which I would always, no matter how bad things were, go to the theater or read a book. And so I would say my gifts, and this is true for a lot of autistic people, are really related to those special interests. And they were also a source of a lot of shame. Like, I remember when I was really into Michael Jackson when I was 10, when Thriller came out. And my mom was like, why does she talk about Michael Jackson all the time? Like, please stop it. Uh-huh. Stop. Or I remember going on a date and talking about whatever I was into at that time. And I could see the guy I was on a date with being like, this girl's a weirdo. Like, this is so weird. And so I was always embarrassed of my special interests. Yeah. And the gift for me was like, oh, I'm good at a few things, but I'm really good at them. So let me just do that. And so I think that, like, for me, I am an incredibly gifted writer. It is so easy for me. And that's an incredible gift. It's not something to be embarrassed about.
Yeah.
So
that's incredible.
And then when it comes to things like the fact I can't cook or drive, I'm not really embarrassed about that anyway, because the flip side is I can write a, 50,000 word book in a day or two.
Well, that's why I was calling you a superhero earlier.
Right.
And it was making another thing that was making me think of a superhero was when you said about your senses are 42% more magnetized. And if you look at movies, then you'll see the superheroes, that's what happens for them.
Yeah. And with autistics, it goes one of two ways. So we either have muted or heightened senses, and they can switch and they can be varied.
Okay.
So you could have muted sense and heightened vision, or you could have heightened sense and heightened vision, or sometimes when you're tired, you have muted vision and heightened sense. So getting to know your sensory needs and your sensory profile is one of the first things I recommend when someone's diagnosed. And if you have a kid or a non-speaking autistic person in your life and you don't know why they're so distressed or having meltdowns or biting people, the answer is almost laying in that sensory profile. So really identifying that. If you have a kid that's refusing to eat, if you have a kid that's refusing to go to school, identifying their sensory needs is the key place to start. And then their monotropic focus will come out. So if we're dysregulated, it's hard for us to find our monotropic focus. So if I'm in a really loud movie theater all the time, I'm not going to be like, oh, let me write a book.
Yeah.
So you have to get them regulated first. If you're like, oh, I don't know if my kid is autistic, they don't have a special interest. That only applies if your kid is melting down all the time. Their special interest will come out once they get regulated.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Now, I guess I'm a little bit naive, but is autistic grounds for medication? Is there medication that goes with it?
You know, so we have a lot of co-occurring conditions
that
can be medicated, and we have about a 40% crossover with ADHD. Oh, and by the way,
that's why I was wondering about that.
I think ADD is ADHD. I think they just changed the name.
Oh, okay.
I think they're the same thing. There might have been a subtle difference, but it's kind of like Asperger's and autism.
Oh, got it.
It was Asperger's and ADD when we were kids, and it's now autism and ADHD, and they're going to change it again. So stay on your toes. I don't know what's happening.
So ADHD, then for the ADHD, there is medication.
Is medication. And the other thing that's very high co-occurrence, and it is very debilitating, is OCD.
So that's a high percentage as well, co-occurrence?
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, that also has to do with how much masking you have to do. So if you're free to stim, you're less likely to have OCDs. But if you're masking all day, every day, it's very exhausting and it'll come out in OCDs. We also have high occurrence of eating disorders. And I do believe for like eating disorders and OCD, there are at least certain pharmacological solutions they can try. But fix your autism. There's not like a take this and you won't be autistic.
Yeah. Thank you for educating me. Yes. That makes sense. It's the co-occurrences that people get Medicaid for sometimes, is there a therapist that can help the people that are diagnosed think like you to embrace their gifts and leverage that? Yeah.
I love this question. Okay. So my co-host at the Autistic Culture Podcast, his name is Matt Lowry, and he is the inventor of something called Autistic Centered Therapy. So it's called AUCT, A-U-C-T. We have an episode of the podcast about this, so you can kind of drill down and learn more about it. And there are also lots of directories of neurodiversity affirming therapists. So it can be called an autism strengths-based therapist or a neurodiversity affirming therapist. And you want to find a therapist to work with who is neurodiversity affirming, which to me is not that controversial, because like, what else? What's the alternative? We just kill autistic people and dyslexic people, like line them up and shoot them. Neurodiversity is obviously how nature was intended to be. And if you want to translate that to God, like God created the world. If you don't like God, science, nature created the world to be diverse. That is how we thrive.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot just have cows. Like, cows are lovely. I love milk. I love cheese. I love ice cream. People love hamburgers. But if we only had cows, this would not be the solution. So when people are trying to cure autism, it's one thing to say
because there's a nonprofit that is called that, right? Cure autism. Mm-hmm.
It's very sad.
Because we want to embrace them, embrace that diversity. Yeah.
Right. Now, that's not to say, you know, again, the autism moms with their you know, child that is non-speaking and in constant distress and meltdowns, or has physical issues that need to be handled. That's not to say they don't deserve support. Of course they do. Not to say don't ever take medicine. Of course. But the idea of we should cure autism like we're curing cancer, I think hurts everyone. Like, did you not want calculus? You're welcome. Did you not want rocket ships? Like, is there any, like, we have made some pretty significant motion pictures. We invented them. You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a low awareness of because they were undiagnosed, all of these incredible inventors that help us in our society today. Well, I want to hear about your books. So what was the inspiration? And so you already shared about your first book when you were seven. So let's talk about some of those bestsellers, like Incubator Author.
So that's a funny story. I had ghostwritten 59 books before I wrote a book with my name on it.
Wow. Why do you think that was?
Well, when I ghostwrite a book, it takes me about 3 months. When I wrote my first book, it took me 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's not because it was hard. I had the problem that a lot of my authors have, which is imposter syndrome. I was writing a book about how to write books. I had written over 50 of them. And I was thinking, like, do people really want to hear from me on how to write a book? Like, what do I know about writing books? What if people think this is, what if I don't actually know? What if I'm like faking this and people are going to read the book and be like, that's how you write books? We wondered why yours were all so terrible. And so I could not get out of my own way, even as a ghostwriter, until I hired a book coach, which was crazy to me because I didn't need any help writing. But really what I needed was deadlines, accountability, and then someone to actually look at what I wrote and say, who I could trust, not just someone who is going to, you know, kiss up to me, but someone who could say, yeah, this is really good. Or yeah, this really needs work.
Yeah.
And who would be honest with me.
That's it for today's episode of Zen Success. Head on over to iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to shows. Subscribe to the show and share with friends. Be sure to head on over to zensuccessshow.com to help you on your Zen Success journey. And join us on the next episode. May you find your own Zen Success in life.